Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Brandon, it wasn't a show where I'd say there were a ton of top candidates for the biggest blockbuster happening. And then we got the completely unexpected, as Pat McAfee said, nobody guessed it, reveal of who the special referee would be for the Street Profits challenging the Usos. And it turned out, spoiler alert, everybody, to be Jeff Jarrett. Yes, Jeff Jarrett. I think I heard that right. That feels very random to me. I think Jeff's a big enough name. You know, people know who he is, or if they don't, they ought to. You know, he's done a lot. But yeah, it's kind of random. I'm looking forward to hopefully him appearing on SmackDown one of the next couple of weeks before SummerSlam, and you know, kind of like doing some sort of segment where, you know, it's SummerSlam. Frankly, gets a little dose of novelty star power. What do you think?
While I certainly agree that people should know who Jeff Jarrett is, and a lot of them watching probably do, WWE certainly didn't treat it as if they expected people to know, because they rolled out that video package, and I was sitting there kind of watching that thinking, like, man, are they worried that people don't know who Jarrett is? Because, I mean, you wouldn't do that if it was like Mick Foley or, you know, someone of that sort. You just make the announcement and let the crowd pop. I think there was some fear there that, you know, if Adam Pearce just says Double J Jeff Jarrett, the crowd is just going to be like, oh, okay. and so they rolled out that video package. It definitely is random. I don't know that it does anything to elevate the match necessarily.
Yeah.
I thought that the whole closing segment was really strange, because you have the Usos and the Street Profits embroiled in this really, really big feud. And the Street Profits, of course, are gunning for the Undisputed Tag Team titles, and they feel they've been wronged by you know, having the shoulder up at Money in the Bank. And they're just cool with standing in the ring opposite each other, both complaining about the referee who's down and hurt. The babyfaces aren't checking on the ref. They're just kind of standing there letting the Usos kind of jaw at Charles Robinson. And they're perfectly content to just stand beside each other with no physical interaction. But then once Pierce makes the announcement of the special guest referee, that somehow triggers both of them, and we get a massive brawl.
Yes. It is weird. I mean, there's so much at stake in this match in a sports-like way. You know, if you think about this as a sports league, it is a high-stakes match.
Sure.
The Street Profits, a big tag team in WWE. The Usos, the biggest tag team, the most successful tag team currently active along with New Day, and they're part of the Bloodline. And the story is, referees aren't very good at catching a shoulder that's lifted off the mat. And so therefore we are bringing in somebody with, and I got to think here. Yes. Zero history with anybody involved in this match. I mean, I would be curious if Jeff Jarrett and the Usos have ever been on television on the same show. I mean, they probably have, but I don't know that. So yeah, it's kind of weird, but at the same time, I mean, it's, you know, you're right. I don't think they should be confident everyone knows who Jeff Jarrett is, but I think people ought to know who Jeff Jarrett is. I'll put it that way. You know, he's a big enough name. He ran, you know, was the co-founder of TNA Impact Wrestling with his dad, Jerry Jarrett, and was a big deal in the 90s as Double J Jeff Jarrett, and was a big fixture in the Memphis wrestling scene, kind of an heir apparent to Jerry Lawler in certain ways, you know, made a stop in the AEW. It's just, you know, he's got a history. So, you know, he's a big enough name that, you know, it's like, I think it'll make some people go, oh, Jeff Jarrett's back. That's kind of interesting. It's not blockbuster. So I am curious if they have something more in mind the next couple of weeks. And I just, you know, do the show live right after SmackDown ends. I haven't had time to process this, but nothing's jumping to mind that I just think, oh, they're clever. I see where they might be going with this.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing there that really indicates that this is anything more than just adding some star power to a match that I don't really think needs it. I mean, just from my own perspective, SummerSlam largely is a card full of rematches, and I'm sure we'll get into that as the show progresses. But for me, I mean, this Usos Street Profits tag title match is by far my most anticipated on the card. I mean, I thought they stole the show at Money in the Bank. I absolutely adored that tag match, and I expect more of the same at SummerSlam. So I was already really looking forward to this match, and while I don't necessarily disagree that on a stage like SummerSlam, it doesn't surprise me that they want something bigger, that they want a stipulation, but I just don't know that shoehorning a special guest referee into this is the right stipulation to go with, especially when the wronged finishes feel so cute. I mean, like, yeah. At Money in the Bank, it worked. I think that they got away with it because it's not something they go to frequently. It was clear that it was part of the angle, and it was the baby faces who were wronged after a really, really good tag team match where it felt like either team could win, and you knew that one, they wanted to go back to the match next month at SummerSlam, but two, they wanted to give the Usos the win and give the Street Profits a legitimate reason for getting a rematch the next month. So I was fine with that. But to do it again tonight and to give it to the Usos so that now there's an even playing field where, oh, both teams have been screwed by the referee, it just felt a little too cute when typically that's not something we see on week-to-week WWE TV. I mean, what are the odds that of all the mistakes the referees could possibly make and the mistakes that they do make, it just happens to involve the two teams who are feuding now over a referee mistake?
It's the same thing when they're building up that a tag team isn't getting along. So just wait for this between Ford and Dawkins, where, oh yeah, there's a miscommunication. Someone stumbled right into the other person and then they overreact. And, you know, I made the case for following Dynamite on Wednesday that I'd like to see more ref bumps that just leads to the ref just getting up. You know, like, it doesn't always have to lead to an opportunity for someone to cheat. Like, and you know, on Wednesday, it wasn't, like, directly to the finish, so in a way, it was sort of novel that the ref went down for a while, there was cheating, but then the match went on for a little while longer, and it wasn't integral in the finish. So I give them some points for that, but if you're going to do a ref bump where heels cheat, give me, like, two ref bumps where the heels don't have a chance to cheat in the previous month or two. And so when the tag team's going to break up and they have this misunderstanding, or they, one of them or both of them overreact to something innocuous and clearly accidental, well, kind of work that in for, you know, plan a couple months ahead, or regularly just have a little checkbox where every 3 months, randomly, no attention's drawn to it, there's, you know, we're F-bump, that nothing happens. And there's a tag team that has a miscue and nothing happens. And then, but even if you did that, it still doesn't fully unwind what you pointed out, which is how cute, how convenient that this happened, because there's no reason it should happen more often to the Usos and Street Profits than it does in any other match. But it fits the story they're telling with a mystery ref. So anyway, but you're right. I mean, this is a match they should be able to sell on its own, but WWE's not in the business of selling people on. This is a great match with great ramifications. It's historically significant. It's a battle of the two best tag teams in the business. Like, they just don't like to do that. They want to add something extra. This does feel, as you put it, shoehorned in.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was just going to add, I mean, it definitely feels like they're throwing something at the wall that they just don't need to do. I mean, I think that fans are genuinely interested in this match. They've done an excellent job building the Usos and the Street Profits as of late. The tag team titles, and by extension the tag division, feels more important in WWE than it has in years. I mean, literally, I think that for me, this is the most that I have looked forward to matches in the tag team division since since maybe the SmackDown 6. And I brought that up last time I was on this show. I think that given the one of the only positives to having Roman Reigns miss, you know, a large portion of weekly TV in the last couple of months has been the emergence of the Usos as genuine main event players. And by extension, yep. the raising of the tag team titles in importance. And I think yes. that they have become a main event act, and by extension, they're making the Street Profits a main event act. And I just think that a reliance on a gimmick like this with a referee that doesn't make sense, I mean, as cool as it may be to see Jeff Jarrett again, I think it drags it down a little bit.
Well, we got a lot more to talk about on tonight's show. Pat McAfee opening up the show, announcing his multi-year deal. He cuts a promo on Baron Corbin, reveals they were ex-roommates. We got Liv Morgan's continued push. We've got Paul Heyman interacting with a variety of people, making some pitches. We've got the Sheamus against insert wrestler who wasn't scheduled again, and more to talk about. And we're expecting to hear from an on-site correspondent. If they come through for us, we should get an idea, Brandon, of what the crowd reaction was in the building for Jeff Jarrett, mm-hmm. and, of course, anything else that happened off-air.
I really want to know what I don't know if you picked up on this, but at the beginning of the show, I really want to know what the deal was with Michael Cole's mic.
Yeah.
He was in the ring talking live and announcing Pat McAfee, but they also had a voiceover of him talking about the main event of SummerSlam and also what was coming up on SmackDown. And I couldn't tell if it was just pre-recorded audio that they piped into the feed, or if he had like his headset in the ring to make that call off camera and then quickly pulled the headset off and took the live mic.
Yeah, it sounded weird. When Cole introduced the show, as you know, they're showing the crowd, and then he was standing in the ring.
Right.
He sounded different. So I rewound and listened, and it was like, oh, yeah, because I thought, oh, that must have been someone else introducing the show. I just wasn't really tuned in, but
right.
I think it was Cole. Was that Graves? Is Graves here? And it was, no, that's Cole. It just sounds different. So I think they just pre-recorded it. But
it
isn't something, if I'm WWE, I would do a lot of, because it wasn't smooth. You know, that's the type of thing that if AEW did it and like Kevin Dunn was watching, he'd be like, oh my God, they're such amateurs. You know, they'd pick on him for that. All right, let's pause. Let's introduce the show, and we got a lot of people lined up to talk to us here on the phone lines too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Friday, July 15th, 2022, and I'm Wade Keller, the editor and publisher and founder of the long-running, more than 30 years running, almost 35 years running, Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. It is, yes, one of the dirt sheets. It's been documenting pro wrestling history, the first draft of wrestling history, for decades, predating the internet. The first newsletters I put out were on a typewriter, not even a word processor or a computer. That's how far back we go. And you can read a lot of those back issues, over 1,700 of them, with a VIP membership if you're interested in wrestling history and the type of coverage that I've given and the whole team has given over these years. And I'm also the editor of PWTorch.com and the host of various podcasts, including VIP shows like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, which went up earlier today, and post-pay-per-view roundtables and the Wade Keller hotlines. But I also host the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and post shows. Those are free for everybody with ads and ad-free for VIP members. And we talk Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown here on the post show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and also provide you with some cool flashback shows from 5 years ago throughout the week. And we thank you for downloading or streaming today's show. The other voice you hear is Brandon LeClaire. He is a longtime PWTorch.com contributor, former SmackDown reporter, and now covers pay-per-views with his reports alongside mine for both AEW and WWE. And he is also a frequent co-host here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. So, Brandon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. Brandon, I talked to you before you went on the air, but you were in the process of getting settled in a new residence. And you talked about, you know, the unpacking. I've gone through that. It just takes so long to, I mean, you feel settled, but you also feel like, oh, there's that to do and that to do and this to do. And it feels like it takes longer than it should, but it's still kind of it's a fun, special process, especially if it's, you know, an exciting move, into, you know, your first house or some sort of, new neighborhood or new layout or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a process, and it took us almost a month, a full month to get in here, because when we bought the place, you know, it's one of those deals where you go and see a place and you love it and you're like, oh, it needs no work. And then all the furniture gets removed and you see everything underneath and like, oh, this hasn't been cleaned. And, oh, you don't notice when there's furniture in it that, oh, all of the trim work is cream, not white. Cool. Got to paint that white. So every inch of the house got painted over the course of a month. Yeah. So lots and lots and lots of work. And as I told you before we came on the air, we have – so the kitchen is done. Our master bedroom is done. So there is at least an area that, like, I can retreat to and close the door and pretend that it's not a mess outside. And then the room that I'm in right now, which is my office – I have my two desks set up in the corner, and the rest of the room, like right now, I'm surrounded by boxes. I have a way out of the room, and that's it.
Wow.
Well, so I'll get there. All week I've been working on the living room and setting up my entertainment center. So that I will definitely share on Twitter once I get it all done, because I'm really excited about that.
Cool.
I got a new TV and some new speakers as well. So it's going to be really cool when it's done.
I love just good TVs, good TV upgrades and good sound system upgrades. It's one of my favorite things. When you just turn it on, you're like, oh, that picture. It's like my first 4K TV was like, wow. And then, you know, sound bars get better and surround speakers get better. And it's just, it's such a fun immersive experience. But anyway, we'll check back in a few weeks, see how things are going.
Yeah.
How can people follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me at TheLeClaire12 on Twitter. I talk some of this house stuff as I have various frustrations along the way. I didn't post it, but yesterday while building a shelf, I clamped my finger in one. And I have the worst blood blister that I have ever had in my life. I'm staring at it right now, and it's a monster. It hurts a whole lot. So I've had many injuries in this process that I didn't expect to have.
Oh man. All right. Well, as I said, we are expecting an on-site correspondent any moment now, but we've got a lot of people lined up on the phone lines, and we probably have some emails, although I haven't looked. No, we're light on emails. So if you want to email us, feel welcome. Consider yourself invited. But we'll get to calls here first and begin with we'll do Nick in Brattleboro first. Nick, it feels like it's been a while. Good to hear from you again.
Yes.
Welcome.
It's been a while. You know, just I'm going to get a bunt single here. And Brandon, I just want to say I can commiserate. I've moved about 15 to 20 times in my life.
Oh, no.
And packed up my parents' houses when they passed away. I mean, and what you got to do is you got to look at it like an elephant. And how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Just one box, go through it all. It will, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And congratulations. It's always a cool thing.
Thanks.
Nick, by the way, I am hearing us on a half second delay, so it sounds like a headphone is real loud or something like that. If you can turn that down.
Oh yeah, no, I'm just on my landline. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I guess you just have a loud earpiece.
Oh, okay. Anyway, just is it me or is SummerSlam probably one of the – now, granted, they've got a couple of weeks to go, but it's – I've got no hot burn for the Lesnar-Reigns match. I think the – I agree with Brandon. I think the Street – and you, that the Street Profits and the Usos are going to have a great match, and Jerry Jarrett's – you know, how he's going to mess things up, I have no idea. And then I'm hoping that they go with Bianca and Becky. But otherwise, it's kind of like the whole – it just – is. I don't know. Am I missing something?
No, you're not. I mean, tonight they focused on – hold on. I'm going to mute you, Nick, while I talk.
Oh, sorry.
I'm hearing such feedback. That's okay. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at the lineup tonight, they hype quite a bit of it. You know, the Usos and Street Profits with Jeff Jarrett, a special referee, and Bobby Lashley and Theory got, you know, Theory talked about that. Pat McAfee and Happy Corbin got a lot of attention. Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar got a lot of attention. Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey got some attention. And those are the five matches officially announced. I fully expect Bianca to have a title defense and Becky to have a significant match, and perhaps they're against each other. We'll watch and see. Brandon, does this look like a lineup that will fill out and feel SummerSlam worthy? And it's going to sneak up on people, too. I mean, forever. I've covered every SummerSlam in Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter. Like, it's an August event. You can't move it to, you know, a month ahead. It just doesn't feel right. And I think between the lineup, at least so far, and the fact that it's just going to kind of come quickly and people are going to be like, wait, it's in July, it might not feel like SummerSlam. And, I mean, they had some curveballs thrown their way, you know, Cody's injury being, you know, a big one. But, you know, this isn't what they were expecting, but I don't know. How do you think it's going to come together?
Yeah, it's been a strange build, and I think it starts with what you mentioned, the fact that it's in July. I think the quick turnaround between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam certainly hurts them, especially when they wanted to build both as big shows. I mean, Money in the Bank was originally meant to be a stadium show as well, so it's hard to book two stadium shows back-to-back and make them feel like they're really big deals. So I think that right out of the gate hurt them. And then, again, like you had mentioned, I think having the show in July with less time to build and also breaking from that tradition, I think for a lot of people, SummerSlam is always that sort of late summer event. And I know I've always looked forward to it that way and always viewed it that way. It's sort of the last couple of weeks of August, and you always it's just something that you expect on the calendar, the same way that you kind of expect WrestleMania to be that last week of March, first week of April. It feels strange, and I think that the card as a whole has been a little underwhelming. We have a lot of rematches. It feels like WrestleMania and Money in the Bank kind of redone overall, I think, with the card that we're getting so far. I mean, yes, Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey is new, but it doesn't feel like a SummerSlam match by any means. It feels
and
more like
technically a rematch.
Yeah, I mean, it is technically a rematch from Money in the Bank, even though it was just, you know, a few seconds long. But still, I think that, you know, the Reigns-Lesnar feud just doesn't feel like it has a lot of heat to it. I think they're trying to add a lot of intrigue by teasing the Theory cash-in, and I still have my doubts as to whether or not that actually happens at SummerSlam, but man, are they selling it like it's a guarantee. So yeah, it's a weaker card. And I was thinking about that as I was watching the show tonight and kind of looking over the lineup. So it prompted me to go to the WrestleTix Twitter, just to find out exactly how things were looking, how the box office was looking for the show. And I mean, they just passed 30,000 seats sold this week. And that struck me as, you know, particularly interesting because Pat McAfee had just finished saying that, you know, over 70,000 people are going to be there for SummerSlam. I mean, the place is configured for 36,000. So they're barely going to hit half of what McAfee is saying. One half of that entire stadium is going to be blocked off. So they definitely have tampered expectations themselves. I mean, this is not a true stadium show. This is much closer to what we saw for SummerSlam last year in Vegas, and I think actually smaller.
Yeah, I'll bring Nick back in. Nick, you want to follow up on that or bring anything else up?
Yeah, no, real quick, just, you know, we got two matches that we didn't get. We didn't get the Lacey match. We didn't get McIntyre versus Sheamus, and I was looking forward to McIntyre Sheamus. I didn't want to see a brawl. They have great matches. I wanted to see them have a match, and I thought it was funny that McAfee even brought up is the WWE is the only game in town that you can bring out a decorated Marine, only female SWAT member of Marine police units, and get her booed. And you can mute me, and I'll hang up after this and just listen to your reaction. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Dick. You too. You can react to any of that, Brandon, but in particular, I want to get your thoughts on Lacey Evans for sure.
Yeah, I definitely thought that was quite the comment by McAfee. Probably something that, you know, they didn't necessarily want McAfee to say, but he's just gonna do it anyway because that's McAfee, and I think that's part of the reason why McAfee got the new deal that he did, and why the fans like him so much. We can talk about that segment too afterward. But I think that McAfee is one of the more genuine and authentic characters that they have in the whole company right now, and so yeah, as far as Lacey Evans goes, I don't see it. I mean, they've tried really hard with her and with her in various roles. I didn't think that the angle with her and Charlotte Flair was working before her last pregnancy. I didn't think that her angle with Becky Lynch was particularly good. In fact, I think it was probably the worst program that Becky Lynch has had since she's become a major player and a major star for them. I just don't think that Lacey Evans is working at the level that they want her to work. And that doesn't mean that she can't be a useful part of the roster in a women's division that is particularly thin, but I don't think that the aspirations that they have for her are ever really going to play out in a meaningful way. I just don't see it in her.
I think if she – and this is a small thing, and it doesn't undo – what you've just said, but if she picked up the pace a little bit, I think it would help.
Yeah.
There's just sort of and it happened in the videos too, you know, the deep breath and then she just sort of talks and she's like one of those people where you're like, I don't have all day, you know, that's kind of what's going through your head. Some emotion that matches. I don't have all day to get to it. And if she picked up the pace a little bit, it doesn't mean that she's suddenly going to be a big heel, but you might not resent her not being a great heel as much, or as interesting of a character. So,
I think too that she's been hurt by some of the booking too. I don't want to place the blame all on her and say that she's just not good enough for the role. I think that WWE has really hurt her chances to be taken all that seriously with the way that they handled her return, especially. I mean, they tried to present her as a babyface, but very, very quickly the heel tendencies kind of crept in. Mm-hmm. And if that was on her doing, if that's, you know, part of her speech pattern and the way she carries herself, then that's on WWE to try to work that out of her, to try to coach it out of her and get her to talk more like a babyface. But that character as a face was doomed from the start because she was talking down to the babyface women on the roster from the get-go. So it was never going to work as a babyface character. When they tried to force it anyway, and it was obviously rejected, and then they teased sort of the switch, and they made her a heel, flip-flopped her on brands, what, three times before actually settling on SmackDown? And then, I mean – To be totally honest, by the time she actually turned heel last week, I thought she already was heel. Like, I thought that she was working Money in the Bank as a heel, and it turns out, I guess she was a babyface.
Yes. Well, I think they were going back and forth. I don't think it was crystal clear consistently what they wanted her to be. I think at stages they were absolutely hoping she'd get a big crowd reaction. But I think then when she didn't, they're like, oh, let's pretend we meant for her to be heel all along. And then I think they changed their mind and said, you know, it's like, no, I really think we can make this work. And then it wasn't working. So then they flipped again.
Yeah. I mean, at least they've seemingly, you know, decided on it now, but still the damage is done. I mean, when you have a character that's sort of teetering on the edge of relevancy in the eyes of the crowd already, I mean, when you turn them back and forth like that, that's really damaging.
Yeah. Also, it's not good to have a show where you have Sheamus, who has a chance to earn a title shot, and with no guarantee that he'll get that opportunity, he opts out of another match because he's just being scared. You have Theory losing by DQ and declaring, I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll have Lacey with an opportunity to beat another opponent of whatever standing Lee is, but to move up the ranks. Because you should want to win. You should want to earn a winner's paycheck. You should want to, you know, impress whoever decides who gets championship matches. three instances on this show. The very foundation of pro wrestling. It's not the foundation of wrestling isn't funny promos. Funny promos augment what ostensibly the main reason this show exists is, which is people fighting to prove who's better. And you have three instances of that being undercut. It's,
and just to add another gaffe to that. That's a great point. And another gaffe on commentary during that Drew McIntyre and Ridge Holland match. McAfee wondered aloud whether or not if Ridge Holland beat Drew McIntyre, did that entitle him to a future undisputed world title shot?
Yep.
And Cole is just like, well, I don't think so. I mean, like, they're giving away how little their rules make sense.
Well, plus you also had McAfee going, I don't know what just happened when Holland took Sheamus's place, but I'm, you know, happy to see this match. I mean, yeah, I didn't know what happened either. Why? So if one wrestler is scheduled for a match, but he brings a couple friends with him, and the wrestler scheduled for the match stands at ringside while the other wrestler attacks the wrestler in the ring, that officially switches the match?
Yeah.
I mean, and I know some people are like, it doesn't matter. It's WWE. It's pro wrestling. And Vince McMahon certainly doesn't think that stuff matters. I think it does. I think you're undercutting any sense that any of this should be taken the least bit seriously when so many arbitrary things are happening and the value of a match and an opportunity to win is diminished and demeaned as it was on this show.
Yeah, it was a odd night in terms of just general disregard for the sort of the. There was a lot of disregard for wrestlers being put in positions that would make them look like, you know, competent individuals. So many times on this show, you had men and women put in situations where they looked like they were undermining their own careers for the sake of a segment. It was counterintuitive. I mean, you mentioned it. Lacey Evans walking out on a match. I mean, Sheamus giving up a potential title opportunity to put up one of his cronies. I mean, like, these are just things that don't pass they just don't pass the sniff test. I mean, like, you do it because you want to fill TV time. But if you just look past the very thought of it happening, it falls apart. The whole thing falls apart.
And that's, I would say that's not good. It's just not,
no.
it's not neutral. Like it's not only not good, it's bad. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not neutral. Well, it's not a positive. It's not an absence of a positive. It is actually an active negative when you do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Jay in Michigan dropped off. Okay. So we'll go, next to Sean in Murfreesboro. Jay, call back if you want. But Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, you are up next. Welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Wait, it's always good to talk to you. Brandon, how are you, man? Good to talk to you.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Well, and Brandon, you brought up my point that I was going to bring up initially was, you know, the fact that in the show tonight was, to me, not good again. And I'm a positive person. I like WWE. I try to think of the good of WWE, but it's hard lately. It's just not been very good to me. But, you know, again, why would Sheamus keep getting out of the match? He knows that him and Drew have been rivals. Why would you not want to fight for a chance to wrestle for the undisputed title? It just makes no sense. It makes none. Like, you can't make any sense of it. And for WWE and Vince to think, oh, that nobody cares about that, they do. It's stupid. It makes no sense. And so that, I'm glad, Randy, you brought that up because I was just like, I thought it was stupid. But then, I wanted to ask you guys real quick, what did you guys think of the backstage when Theory was with Kayla or Megan, sorry, and then Heyman said, Megan, can we talk here? And I really liked what Theory – now, I'm not in love with him winning Money in the Bank. I mean, I think he's done a good job so far. Like, I see what Vince sees in him. And I thought tonight with him and Paul backstage, I thought he did a really good job in that. He held his own, I think. What did you guys think about that interaction? Because I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was on my agenda to talk about for sure. I thought Heyman is – when Reigns isn't on every week and you've got a depleted roster, you know, Big E's not coming back anytime soon, and Charlotte's out. I mean, we could list the people. Sammy's, you know, got his arm in a sling and has been away for a few weeks. Kevin Owens out for a while, although back anytime. Paul Heyman is valuable. And I thought he just played his part really well. You know, you can debate what, you know, well, I don't know. You can discuss the value or the merit or whatever of the role that he's playing and the Money in the Bank mystery and the pitch to Theory and the pitch to Madcap. I thought it worked. But his performance is, I think, top-notch. And I thought when somebody – I always think when a wrestler kicks an announcer away from doing their job and they just scurry away scared, I don't like it. I think it's demeaning. It feels like the interviewers act more meek than they should in WWE, and has not been the case historically with interviewers. And I think it shows the culture a little bit that if you're not a tough badass wrestler, you're just nothing, and you're to be just treated like crap. And that just isn't historically the way interviews have been presented in pro wrestling. I like this better. Megan kind of looked at Paul when he said, can you give us some time? And she kind of like thought, do I want to leave? And it was sort of like she had agency and she decided, I want to leave. It's not, I'm not leaving because you're ordering me to and I don't want to. And I thought the body language was good. So, Brendan, your thoughts on Heyman, your thoughts on Megan, your thoughts on Kayla, whatever, as far as that topic goes.
Yeah, I think that Megan had a little bit of agency, though not as much as Kayla has usually had with Paul.
Right. Yeah.
And I miss that dynamic a bit, and I'm glad that Paul injected that into the conversation, saying that he liked Megan better than Kayla because she was more apt to listen to him. Even if she did, in the end, you know, seem to do so of her own volition, she still ultimately did what Paul wanted, whereas Kayla almost certainly wouldn't have. So I really liked that touch, and I still think that the chemistry between Kayla and Paul Heyman is fantastic. I love when they have segments together. As far as Theory goes, I have been more on the side of Todd Martin with Theory in that I don't see it. I think that he's talented in the ring. I have some legitimate questions about the moral decision to push him given his involvement in the speaking out movement last summer. But aside from that, I just feel like his character, to me, that character feels a little bit too much like Austin Theory, the wrestler trying to play bad guy wrestler. It seems put on, and it's interesting that would be the case because he's got the look, he's got some natural talent and charisma, but for some reason, him acting like the holier than thou, you know, good looking future superstar feels more put on than it should. And I thought that segment with Heyman tonight is one of the only times where it's felt more natural. But I don't think he held on to it because when he was out there later on in the night, I didn't quite feel like it stuck. I thought that Heyman might have brought it out in him, and then he lost it a little when he was back out there with Madcap Moss. So jury's still out for me on Theory. I'm still a little lower on it than I think most people are overall. And I also just couldn't help but think about how much fun it would have been to have Sami Zayn carrying around that briefcase. I mean, like,
I know
when Sami came out behind Theory, I was just thinking about, man, like, if Sami is carrying that briefcase every week and just sucking up to the bloodline as much as possible, to the point that you think that he's really going to go through with it and not cash in the contract. And then they could do this slow burn with the bloodline where they just slowly, slowly turn on Sammy and make comments and get under his skin till the point that Sammy finally snaps and cashes in. And I think it just could have been a really cool slow burn story that could have been nuanced and really effective because of the people involved. I think that Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns, and Jimmy and Jey Uso, along with Sami Zayn, could have told a really complex and interesting story for months.
I agree. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and that's what I thought the same thing, too, when I was watching it, especially with Sami on commentary. He's just he's so good, and they could have done such a good thing with that, and they just don't – they want to tell that they see something more in Theory because of the look he has and whatever – you know, like, again, I think he's – I'm willing to let him play out and see what he can do. I mean, I'm open to it, but I just – they could have told a better story with another person, and they just – Sammy's been so low, they just don't think enough of him to do something like that, and it's just disappointing. And going back to – I think over the last few months, I guess most of this year – Is it just me, or they're really taking a lot of the match time out of a lot of these matches? There's just nothing to any of the matches we're seeing on SmackDown anymore. They're 2 to 5 minute matches where there's either a disqualification, which we saw with Theory, which I, again, he's a heel, but I still didn't really care for it. And then again, Lacey not showing, just walking out of the match, the Sheamus stuff, the Usos, you know, the Jimmy against, you know, Dawkins match that ended up with the stupid thing with, you know, the arm up, you know, with the Usos. And it's just like, they're not giving these people time to tell stories in the ring of any kind anymore. Like, is that crazy? What do you guys think about that?
No, I think it's an issue. I mean, I've noticed just in doing my TV reports, I'm like, oh, you know, we're in hour number 2. What match are we on? As I'm typing, you know, the match number, I'm like, oh, it's probably match 4, you know, like, or it's match 3. And it's like, oh no, it's the second match. You know, like there's been, oh, and that match was 3 minutes. Wow. There wasn't much wrestling at the beginning of the show. That kind of feeling is happening. Like, there was one match in hour 1 of SmackDown, and it went 9 minutes in a full hour of a televised wrestling show. And then hour 2 consisted of a roughly 3.5-minute Drew Ridge match, a Theory Madcap Moss match that went 12 minutes, had an unsatisfying ending, and a commercial break in the middle. And your main event was about 7 minutes or so. So, what, that's 19... plus 3, so 22, plus 9, so 31, minus 1 mid-match commercial break. That's just not a lot. Like, there should be one match that's that long on SmackDown. And sometimes they do it, and it really is, it's nice. They have a thin roster, Brandon, and they don't have a lot of matches that I think they feel they can give away pay-per-view length, pay-per-view quality matches that people will stay tuned for, without giving away something that they're trying to save for one of their PLEs.
Yeah, it's stark and how thin the roster really is. I mean, when you start a show and you say, you know, the main event is Angelo Dawkins versus Jimmy Uso. I mean, no disrespect to either of those guys. Like I said, I think that tag team feud is excellent, and I'm really looking forward to their match at SummerSlam. But if that's your main event and you're really not even going to give them all that much time to work, I mean, you just start to see how quickly things fall apart with this thin roster. And it brings me to sort of a larger issue. And this is sort of on the macro for the company as a whole, but that Madcap Moss and Theory match, you know, you heard Pat McAfee say when the bell rang that this is the future of WWE right here. You have two up and coming superstars. And I sort of like almost gasped at the thought. It's like, you know, he's not wrong, but he should be.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if that's all they've got, I just don't know. I mean, like, yes, Theory, jury is still out on Theory. Like, I'm willing to you know, I could very well be wrong about Theory, and it does seem that the crowd is getting behind booing him. So there's no question that I just may have my own issue with Theory. But Madcap Moss, to me, I mean, there's no character there. There's no gimmick. I mean, he's wearing generic tights. The music is generic. I just don't see it with that guy. And for them to go 12 minutes, Wade, when you said 12 minutes, I was shocked. I thought they went like 20. That match felt like it was a year long. and then it ended in a disqualification on top of that. On a positive note, though. So McAfee said that they are the future and that they're these two up-and-coming superstars. And I thought later in the show we actually got two up-and-coming superstars because, to me, both not just Montez Ford, but Angelo Dawkins recently, I think, has proven that he can be a singles guy too, that this is not just, you know, this isn't a Michaels Jannetty situation. Like, Angelo Dawkins is very capable and could very well be successful in the way that I think Montez Ford could be successful. I think those are two guys that you point to as a potential future singles breakout, more so than even Theory and Madcap Moss.
Yes. First of all, I mean, Dawkins got to show me more, but I'm not firmly thinking it's not going to happen. I'm open to it, and I think they are. I thought they were trying to do that. Then he like unnecessarily lost in a match where R-Truth was on his team. So I was like, oh, maybe they're not pushing him. Maybe they think there's a step back. He's not up for it. But no, he's good, and I'm curious what both Ford and Angelo do as singles wrestlers, not linked. And I think they'll have more success and they'll be more interested than, say, when New Day break up. Well, I don't know. That's kind of unfair because people were into Kofi and people were into Big E. Not sure that they were super into Xavier in that role. But Montez is absolutely – I have him – I mean, if I'm drafting guys from WWE's roster to build a company around, I take Montez ahead of Theory. And that's saying something because I am higher in Theory than you are. And I don't think – people with Theory's ability to do what he does in the ring, on the mic, the level of confidence that belies his age doesn't come around all the time. You know, you couldn't drop Ricochet in that role and not have people be going, geez, get the mic out of his hand and my God, he can't act. And, you know, I mean, Ricochet is way more dazzling than Theory, but Theory is way more useful to the way Vince McMahon and WWE utilize wrestlers. It doesn't mean it has to be a choice between those two because you can actually feature Ricochet really well, but you need to have a Theory to fill TV time the way WWE does, even if though we're being critical of how WWE is filling TV time right now with too much talking, not enough wrestling. Madcap is the main guy here to talk about because they need more of a hook with him. Mm-hmm. They need to figure something out. He can't just be the guy in the black trunks with a stupid name and generic music who split off from Corbin. I think they're trying to figure that out. I think the idea is let's not do, you know, a gimmick of the month that doesn't work out and switch and switch and switch. Let's just kind of let him be who he is, strip it down to just sort of basic stuff, and he'll ease into it. You know, he'll find his way. And I hope that's the case, and it might work out. But, I mean, you know, you want there to be at least six people, eight people who you're more excited about the future of than Madcap. on your roster, and it doesn't mean Madcap can't rise and surprise us, but he hasn't shown me enough where I'm like, oh yeah, he's one of the top three, four names you want to mention as future stars.
I want to throw out there too, before we move too far on from Montez Ford. I don't know if you guys saw, but Ford got the rub from The Rock on Twitter, which is, you know, it's just words, but I mean that's a big endorsement.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Cool. All right. Sean, back to you, I guess.
Yeah, I did not see that, Brandon. So, no, that's how I phrase it. And I'm with you guys on Montez. I think, you know, I mean, Angelo too, but, you know, Montez for sure. I really like what he can do in a singles push. But the last topic I was going to bring up to you guys was, going back to, feels like, again, 5 hours ago, but when McAfee, you know, introduced Liv, and I really hope the on-site correspondent is able to come in for you guys because I'm really curious to see. I just didn't think Liv got a great reaction. There wasn't much there. Like, he was, like, you know, yelling for her, and I just didn't feel like the crowd is really, really, truly getting behind Liv. And I wanted to say I like that they're trying to do something with Liv. If you're going to go with her, go with her. I get it. It was weird her, again, catching it on Ronda. I thought that was weird. Yeah, the dynamic's going to be weird there. I'm curious what they do these next couple weeks. First, I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the match with Natalya. You know, it was fine for what it was, I thought, but I was curious what you guys thought about it. And then just Liv on the mic, how you guys think she's progressing. You know, I think it's okay, but I think it definitely needs to get a lot better, and I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on that. And, Nick, it was good to hear from you. Wade, appreciate all you do. I got to go to Wrigley Field the other day, and that was like a dream for me. I've been there, but it's been like forever, and it was just cool to, like, you getting to go to Target Center. It was just cool with me seeing my Cubs, even though they really stink. So it was fun to get to see them. And, Brandon, good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, though.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Sean. Always good to always great hearing it from you. Go ahead, Brandon. What do you think?
Which part?
Any part that Sean just brought up.
Hold on. I was looking at two different things. So refresh my memory.
Sean, refresh both of our memories right now. I got sidetracked too with our on-site correspondent.
Okay. Lynn, I was with the match.
But I forgot.
How you think?
Me too.
No, you're good.
Liv,
like the
Liv
Natalya is like the match, and then Liv. Liv, yeah, just Liv overall.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder. I blanked out just like you did, Brandon. If I could have, I would have reminded you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Liv and Natalya, for sure. I thought the match was okay. I thought that that. You know, Natalya is always someone good to work with when you've got someone who is trying to come into their own a bit, and I think that is the position that Liv is in right now. So Natalya is always a good opponent for that. There were a couple of spots there that were a little clunky, which I think has been the norm for Liv so far. I'm sort of in between on Liv Morgan as a whole, because I think that she hasn't shown a ton in the ring, and I think that she has been okay on the mic. She's had some moments where I thought that she's come off really natural and shined, and she's had some other moments where it felt like she couldn't deliver the words that were being written for her in a way that made them seem believable. And so I think it goes back and forth on a week-to-week basis with her. I think that the biggest thing that she has going for her, which a lot of other people on the roster do not have, is a natural and genuine connection with the audience. And I think that's the reason that she's getting a shot right now, and I think that's the reason why I am open to her having more than just a transitional run. Because I don't know that Liv as a character, as a total package, without the crowd involvement is quite enough to be catapulted to this position. But I think that having the crowd behind her the way that she does makes it worth trying out to see if they can get her there. I didn't necessarily notice a huge disparity in her crowd reaction tonight, like Sean was talking about. But I also want to mention that that could be because for the last like 6 months or so, my local Fox affiliate, the sound has been terrible. And I don't know if that is something that has been happening to other people or if it's my local affiliate specifically. I thought maybe even transitioning from – so when we moved, I transitioned from having traditional cable to YouTube TV. And I thought that the YouTube TV feed might be a little better, and maybe it was just, you know, my terrestrial cable. But it wasn't, which it was still just as bad, which makes me think that either it's a national broadcast thing or it's just my local affiliate. So I don't know if, Wade, you have noticed anything in particular, but I have a hard time distinguishing crowd reactions on SmackDown, specifically on Fox.
Yes, no, and this was actually an especially odd-sounding show, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. It happens sometimes with Dynamite too. So I don't know if it's because I haven't been able to figure out a pattern and why sometimes it is hard to tell. But this was one of those shows where I did think it was.
It almost sounds to me like a mono mix being like sampled for stereo or surround sound. It's a strange hollowness.
Yeah, and there's a weird just sort of background humming noise or something. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really explain. Well, we have just a person to ask about crowd reaction because we've got our on-site correspondent joining us right now. Chris, thank you for calling and being our on-site correspondent. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Overall, pretty good crowd tonight. I was pretty surprised, mainly because honestly, I didn't see any advertisement for them coming to Orlando until like earlier this week. And so I was like, oh man, like, you know, if I'm just seeing this, maybe it's kind of like this for everybody, but a lot of people showed up tonight. Pretty full except for the upper section. Upper section, half of it was tarped off and we had a lot of empty seats around us. We were in the upper section as well. It was just my girlfriend and myself, but pretty solid show. As far as just, I think a lot of people were there, you know, no pun intended to the theme song, but they're just there to have a good time, and that was it.
Well, I want to ask, so I don't forget, about the reaction to Jeff Jarrett and his video playing on the screen, and if it seemed like the fans in attendance knew who he was or cared if they did know who he was.
Honestly, so I had to – my girlfriend, not really a wrestling fan, but she watches alongside of me sometimes. And I had to kind of explain this to her. When he came on the screen, it was kind of like a reaction of people being excited, but also questioning as to how he fit in and who he was.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Same here.
Yeah. So that was basically that was the whole crowd reaction. Was everybody was almost like a whoa, what is going on kind of thing. And, you know, after they showed the video package for him, everybody was like, okay, cool. You know, we can get on board with that. It's in Nashville, so it's it should be fine. But, I mean, even for me, like, as a longtime watcher, I was like, I have zero clue of how Jeff Jarrett fits in. But, you know, it is what it is, and we're here for the ride. So
I can say with confidence, and I like Jeff. But him being mm-hmm. special referee is not going to sell out that building. It's not,
no.
You know, I mean, he's got a history in Memphis and Nashville, and that's where he came from. And it adds a little something extra because he can do a lot of local publicity. And I guess if they're trying to, as we talked about earlier, shoehorn somebody into a being special referee, it actually might be, now that you bring up, you know, the Nashville connection, and that might be, that just gives him an excuse to do a bunch of local public relations to help try to get more people in that stadium. That might be entirely what it comes down to, Brandon.
Yeah.
By the way, Brandon LeClaire is my co-host, Chris. And, Brandon, I want to read your reaction to that, and then also you can ask Chris the next question.
Yeah, I think we may have just deduced what it is. But it's interesting to kind of hear that the live audience had sort of the same reaction that we did when we went live on this show. Kind of like, yeah, this might be cool, but what exactly what is happening here? Why are we doing this? So my first question, I brought this up with Wade earlier, but at the start of the show, you guys had Michael Cole in the ring to introduce Pat McAfee, and for us at home, the TV audience got what appeared to be a voiceover of Michael Cole announcing what was on the show. So I'm assuming that was pre-recorded, but I just wanted to check with you. Like, did he have a headset or anything that he was announcing live, or was it just straight up he was in the ring with a microphone and we were just hearing pre-recorded audio?
Yeah, so I'll be 100% honest. I literally walked into my section at like 7:58 Eastern time. So I was right on time. And when they, I was trying to just gather, you know, what I was looking at and everything. And I was like, okay, you know, it looks like Pat's down there in the ring. And then Michael Cole's voice came over the entire system. And I was like, oh, that's
okay.
Kind of odd. Like, it did sound very, like, pre-recorded. But I was still, I think, trying to get my bearings straight, you know, at the time. But, yeah, once Pat started talking, it seemed more, you know, I don't know, run-of-the-mill, genuine.
Interesting.
But, yeah, it definitely sounded pre-recorded when I first heard Michael Cole over the PA speakers. Because that's exactly... I mean, once you guys said it, I was like, no, that's exactly what it sounded like.
Interesting. Okay. So. That is definitely strange. It was an odd opening. It was kind of jarring. Talk about what was the reaction for Pat McAfee? Cause it sounded to me like he may have been the most over guy on the show.
Yeah. He got a massive, massive ovation. I would say, him, Liv Morgan got a pretty decent ovation. Matt Riddle versus Omos was the dark match main event, and Matt Riddle got a great ovation, you know, hometown. Technically, you know, he lives out here in Orlando, so he got a big reaction. And then Street Profits and Usos both got really warm reactions from the crowd. But, yeah, Pat was definitely – he was up there with crowd noises. you know, good way to start the show, I would say. So, yeah.
How did Liv Morgan fit into that group in terms of crowd reaction?
I think this is just me talking, but I think people really like seeing her as women's champion. And so I think they're just excited for Liv Morgan coming out. I will say, though, by the end when she was cutting her promo about being like this underdog, it was kind of just like, you don't have to put yourself in the underdog position. You can just own the fact that you're women's champion. And, you know, and I get that's probably not what they've written for her as far as her character goes. But I think people are excited about Liv Morgan, and that's why, you know, she's as over as she is. And including myself, I think it's great that she's in the position that she's in. But I think it's more so like I said, towards the end of it, people were kind of just like, oh, okay, this is great, but we really want to see you, like, not have to be in, like, this forever underdog position.
Yeah. How did the response to Drew McIntyre compare to, say, Riddle and McAfee?
Drew was pretty over. I think as far as reactions of the night go, he was probably up there with a loud pop. The only problem was that they did his entrance right before that commercial break, and it was like every single time that they did commercial, it's like the crowd died to death. Like, it just got super quiet in there, and I think it took a lot of the steam out of the show. This was my girlfriend's first taping that she's ever been to for television. Yeah. I've taken her to – we went to SummerSlam last year, and we went to an AEW taping earlier this year in Orlando. And one of the things that she noted was she was like, gosh, they do a lot of commercial breaks, and she's like, they do it at, like, the most – like inopportune times when people are making entrances and such. And she was telling me that, and it's like, man, like she doesn't watch the product on a weekly basis, monthly basis or anything. I think she'll overhear me listen to, you know, a podcast, and that's about it. So for her to make a note of how many commercial breaks they did that kind of took the steam out of the show, you know, says something, because I think Drew kind of fell into that category. Everybody was super hyped when he came outside or out into the arena, and then once they went to commercial break, it was like, bam, stone cold silence. And then after 4 minutes of commercial, he went on the top turnbuckle, pyro goes off, everybody's cheering again.
We were talking earlier about the quantity of in-ring action during 2 hours. Now, granted, you got a main event dark match. You might not have known if there was a taping or a match beforehand. But for that 2 hours before the dark match, did it feel like you were on a TV show set watching a lot of commercial breaks and video packages and talking, but not a lot of wrestling? Or did it not jump out to you? Besides the commercials, did it not seem like the quantity of wrestling wasn't what you would expect going to a pro wrestling show?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a really good question, because last week's episode of SmackDown had like very little in-ring time. So I think my worry going into this show was that there was also going to be very, very little in-ring time. And so I felt like we got a lot of in-ring time, but that's only in comparison to the previous week. But I will say there was one point where, everything kind of just shut down for everybody. And it was the Austin Theory versus Madcap Moss match. Everybody was very into that match once it took off. But I'm not kidding. I think Austin Theory stood in that ring for about 12 minutes before from making his entrance to when the match actually started. Yeah, two whole commercial breaks. There's a whole segment in between that. And it was just like we were all just watching the Tron at that point for, you know, a solid 10 minutes or so. Madcap Moss makes his entrance, commercial break. So that's at that point of the show, that's when it really, really like stuck out that we are at a live television taping, and this is not something that is just like happening and they're just going to cut to commercial breaks and you won't notice it. Like it was actively known by everybody where they're like, man, they're shut. Cause every time they shut down the house lights for a commercial. So it was like, no matter unless people were in the ring, you know, of course. But after, like, after Moss had made his entrance, it was literally him and in theory in the ring, in the total darkness for 4 minutes, and then the bell rang once they came back from commercial.
And for people who didn't see the show, Theory made his ring entrance. They went to a full commercial break. A video package aired on what happened with Theory and Brock Lesnar on Raw earlier in the week. Then Megan Morant interviewed Madcap Moss, which included Paul Heyman coming out. So it was a longer backstage interview than usual. Then they went to a commercial break. Then they came back and Cole hyped the Maximum Male Models next week would feature the 2022 Beachwear collection and a plug for the website for which they've had over 8,000 applicants. And then they came back and finally, then they finally went to the ring to start the match. So yeah, two full commercial breaks and in between segments.
They did the full Maximum Male Model segment too, not just Cole promoting it. So they had the video too.
Yep. Oh. Yeah. Brandon, anything else you want to bring up to Chris? Yep.
Did it feel to you, so you know, when you kind of look at this show in totality, you kind of see pretty quickly how much of the you know, week to week star power is not there. I mean, no Roman Reigns, no Brock Lesnar. I mean, no Ronda Rousey, obviously no Charlotte Flair, who's not, you know, on the week-to-week TV right now. Was there any disappointment from the crowd? I mean, or did you sense that it was just, you know, happy-go-lucky, like they're glad to see WWE, the total package, versus any specific wrestlers who weren't there?
So right next to me, my girlfriend immediately asked me, she was like, hey, between Raw and SmackDown, who's on this show that I would know? And I was like trying to pick out names, and you know, Drew, Ronda, and Liv, they were the first ones that came into my mind because I was like, oh yeah, you know, she'd know who those people are. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, man, I feel like Raw has some star power. But even when I was thinking about Raw, I was like, you know, you can have you'll have like Lashley or Riddle. Riddle is her favorite, so I'm glad that she got to see him tonight. you know, so yeah, it was hard thinking about star power. The poor lady sitting behind me, she was beyond stoked when we got there to see Bianca Belair, and I was just like, man, I don't have the heart to tell you that she's not on this show, but so. I think for me, being a longtime fan, the lack of star power was definitely there. I think they did their best. You know, everybody got pretty good ovations, you know, for the most part. And I think they probably did their best, you know, with Pat and Drew and Street Profits and, you know, the Usos got a huge reaction when their music hit for Sami Zayn's segment with Theory. So I think for the most part, yeah, people were happy to be there.
I remember going to the WWE event and the New Day were advertised and the New Day did not appear. And when I went to my car on the parking ramp, there was a family with kids with custom New Day signs and they looked so sad.
Oh, no.
They were going back to their car after the show. So yeah, I mean, you know, WWE just thinks, you know, they come to see the WWE product, but especially when you specifically advertise someone or people expect the full roster, maybe minus a top star, but to have no Ronda, no Bianca, no Charlotte, no Reigns, no Lesnar, I mean, that's a lot of names that appear on some of these shows who weren't there.
Honestly, one thing that, you know, that I noticed is that when they advertised Lesnar for next week, there was kind of like this giant sigh throughout the arena of people being like, oh, we thought he was going to be here tonight, and he wasn't. I heard that a lot. You know, his music hit, everybody was cheering, they show him advertised for Boston next week, and people were just like, ah, okay. So yeah, I think there was kind of a little bit of a vibe of, man, we really got gypped on this show, or it just felt like a very in-between show. I don't know how else to describe that. Yeah. Felt like we were in between, like, two big shows of SmackDown. I don't know if big is the word that I would use to describe it, but, you know, eventful. And I feel like this show was kind of just, it was just there. That's just my honest take on it. So, yeah.
Brendan, do you want to wrap up with any final question or topic for Chris?
Well, just to kind of follow up on what you're saying, Chris, it feels like Orlando is a little bit of like it's sort of home away from home for WWE. And I wonder if there isn't some sort of comfortability where, you know, they know that this is a market that they do relatively well in. I mean, it looks like based on what you said and what I saw on WrestleTix earlier tonight that the show sold pretty well. I mean, overall, it seems like it's a really strong market for them and a stronghold. So I wonder if they just feel like they can get away with this kind of thing where they don't have to put their best foot forward. And there is sort of that comfortability of like, this is a second home to us, and not in the way that Madison Square Garden is where they feel like they have to go all out. But I thought it was interesting that you wouldn't have heard this, but on commentary, Michael Cole actually made a passing reference to the Amway Center being home of the original Thunderdome.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Orlando has that on their tourism website.
Oh, do they really? I don't.
No,
I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, I cannot confirm either way.
I don't know, Chris, if you're from the Orlando area, but I actually, my one time in Orlando was for WrestleMania, WrestleMania 33 a few years ago. So I spent three separate nights at the Amway Center, and it's a great facility. I mean, it's a really great arena. So it's no surprise to me that they go there frequently.
It is, and I moved out here from Las Vegas about a year ago. So it's for me, it's a lot of game used too, but man, the Amway Center, I was also there for WrestleMania 33 back in 2017. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've always had great affinity towards that arena. I was also there for the Rumble in 2016 and, super clean, super nice facility. So always good things. Back to the comment though, about like WWE kind of feeling like it's a second home, I can 1,000% agree with that, because I think there is kind of like this feeling, and you kind of hit it on the head of like, hey, you know, a lot of the talent is from there. We have NXT like 20 minutes away every single Tuesday here. So
yeah,
a lot of the people that are coming to these shows, they're kind of just coming here because of WWE, right? And because the same people, every time I've at least gone to NXT, I always see the same crew of people there, regardless if it's a good show, bad show. I usually see a lot of the same faces. I'm not there every week because personally I'd be exhausted. But, you know, every once in a while when I have gone, I'm like, okay, cool. It literally seems like people are sitting in the same spots, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those people were here at SmackDown tonight, not because they thought it was going to be like some star-packed show, but mostly just because it's wrestling and it's in Orlando. And, you know, that's kind of like the two kind of go hand in hand, with the exception of New York and WWE for separate reasons. So.
I actually do want to bring up a couple other quick things. Just the New Day and Viking Raiders, how did that go over? And Lacey Evans, what's your assessment of the crowd interest in her? What kind of heat did she have?
Yeah, so when the New Day came out as the Viking Raiders, there was a little bit of confusion at first, and then there was just audible laughs for the best reasons, by the way. I thought it was a great segment. I got a kick out of it. A lot of people did get a kick out of it as well. So I would say pretty solid there. And then as far as Lacey Evans goes, man, she got a lot of heat, got a lot of boos for the night. I'm very indifferent about the character because I feel this is just my take, but I feel there's no reason to have her be a heel. But she's, you know, working with that crowd, trying to make them boo her. The person I felt most bad for was poor Aaliyah, you know, in the ring. Lacey Evans cuts this promo and walks out. No match, no nothing. She was also in the ring during commercial break and everything. So I was like, man, like she was out there for, you know, probably 8-10 minutes or so, and also didn't get to do a single wrestling move before going to the back. So
as a podcaster, but yeah, I mean, Chris and Brandon, as a podcaster, it'd be so weird if I showed up, sat down, got my headset on, moved the mic into position, you know, felt acoustically I'm in a good place, put thoughts into, and then all of a sudden, you know, someone shows up and says, oh yeah, we just need you to sit there and say nothing for 10 minutes and then go home. Like, it's so weird, especially if I had to travel cross state lines to get to that moment. And then I just look and go, yeah, thanks for showing up, but you're actually just going to get ready to podcast. But then not podcast.
Yeah.
You're gonna do it
in the dark while an ad break is on too.
Right. Yeah. I'll sit in the dark for a
yeah.
minute. Also. You know,
yeah. Exactly.
I don't know.
But
anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I interrupted you for my story.
No. You're completely fine. But yeah. No. I was gonna say that's basically the notes from SmackDown tonight.
I can't remember.
You
did
know,
you see what happened in the dark match? What the outcome was of that?
Oh, I did not. Matt Riddle, he beat Omos via DQ. He attacked MVP, and then Omos went to go tackle him, and he yanked down the top rope. Omos fell over. Matt Riddle hit a kick on MVP, and then sent the fans home happy. And I think they played his music for like 20 minutes straight.
Wow, another DQ finish. Wonderful.
What do you
yeah.
think give a finish
yeah.
in the dark match? Man.
No bumps taken by Omos.
I mean, in a way, that's
bump
good
because
I don't think he's capable.
Clean.
Yeah,
I don't think he's
for
capable
sure.
Either.
He and Aaliyah.
Yep. Yeah, they're both on a nice little streak of no bumps. So.
Very good. Well, Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate your generous time tonight and sharing not only your perspective, but your girlfriend's too. That's very interesting.
Yeah, no problem at all. So we didn't get an announcement of when they will be back, but I'm sure they will be back during the holiday season, as I have heard that is pretty common for them.
Great. Well, if you if it works out and you do go, let us know.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great weekend.
All right. Absolutely. You guys too.
All right. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, the way to do it is to email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the name of the city and the date of the show in the subject line, and I will mark it down, and as the show approaches, get in touch with you. Please don't be shy. If you want to be sort of the emergency backup, you're not like super excited to do it, but you'll help out the show if we need you. State that. Otherwise, just, you know, let us know. And we'd love to hear from you. It's always fun to hear from people who are in the building. Yeah, go ahead, Brandon.
I want to add that when I went to the AEW taping in Boston back in April, it was also my girlfriend's very first experience going to a wrestling show.
Yep.
And her one major takeaway that she still talks about to this day, she'll bring it up like maybe once every like 4 or 5 times that she'll see me watching wrestling. She's just like, I can't believe that the people there can't hear the announcers.
Yep. People think that it blows. I never expected that. I don't think I did when I went to my first show as a kid. But
I don't either. Yeah. I don't think I did either.
Yeah. All right. Cool. By the way, if you're listening to the show and you want to still call in, you can 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad. We've had a couple of people on hold a long time who have stuck with us a long time, and we'll go to them now. We'll start with Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
My first question is about Austin Theory, or Theory as he's called now. What are the odds that he cashes in on The Rock and he waits till around WrestleMania or after WrestleMania to do that to get the title off The Rock real quick?
Wow, I hadn't thought of that scenario. Ryan, you bring the questions that I have not thought to talk about every week, and that is looking ahead. You know, Jericho bragged a lot about beating Rock and Austin in the same match. Hurricane Helms, you know, bragged a lot about beating The Rock, I think. What, did he beat The Rock? Is that what he brags about? Anyway, Yeah, he did. And so, you know, Theory, cashing in on The Rock, if you are committed to elevating Theory, Brandon, that is a way to get Rock to end the Reigns' reign, but not have to have him stick around, and then to lose in a way that doesn't really isn't a big blemish, because it would be, I wouldn't say totally unexpected, but especially if there's like a bloodline beat down a Rock after the match, Theory runs out. That's a hell of a newsworthy finish. I'd have to think more about the pros and cons of that, because if that happened, you would also have the baked-in rematch between Rock and Reigns, because Rock never got to actually be champion. But that's assuming Rock's going to come back and get a title shot, and that's a bit of a stretch for a 50-year-old movie star to think he actually wants to be champion. But I guess they could find a way to tell that story. What's your reaction, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting option, and it does present the scenario that you talk about where The Rock wins the title, presumably defeats Roman Reigns, and then you get the title off of him quickly without having to have a month-long build or have him work multiple dates, which I suspect is not something that he will be looking to do if, in fact, he is going to make a return. It would not be my first choice, only because I think that it would be really important for Roman Reigns to beat The Rock to sort of cement his legacy. I don't know that you want to send the message that Roman Reigns has beaten absolutely everybody, and the one guy that he can't beat is the 50-year-old movie star.
Right.
I just don't know if that is the message that you want to send. I think that scenario unquestionably makes Theory a huge star, but it does sacrifice Roman Reigns to some extent. So I don't know. I mean, we could be talking about that as a legitimate possibility if we hear word that, you know, Reigns really does want to continue cutting back the schedule and become a part-time act, and maybe we are moving away from the Roman Reigns era. So if there is no significant need to protect him on a major level and cement his legacy by beating The Rock, then yeah, I think that becomes a more legitimate conversation. I'm not ready for that right now. I am not at a place with Theory where I think that is something that I would enjoy watching. But given how high on Theory they appear to be, I guess I wouldn't rule it out.
And how short they are on rising stars show the range that Theory has shown.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, topic number two, what do you got for us?
Topic number two is on this new character that's going to debut next week, Maxxine Dupri. Is there any possibility this could be someone outside of the company that's company before, but the WWE universe isn't really familiar with them, such as a Mandy Leone? Because I think if they put someone on NXT, you know, that might not be believable, because all these girls are pretty young or fairly young, and Mandy's, I believe, in her younger 30s. So I think that would make a lot more sense, and she's very attractive too and would fit that model gimmick, I think.
And they said it's Max Dupree's sister, right, Brennan?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So I haven't even given a second thought of it beyond when it first was – they first mentioned it, but it's worth talking about. What do you expect? Did anything come to your mind?
Nothing jumped out at me. I was kind of thinking about that as well, but nothing jumped out. I'm actually looking at the NXT roster right now just to see if there's anybody that sort of jumps out at me and makes a ton of sense. I mean, a lot of these women are not really in a position to be called up right now. I mean, I guess that you could go with, I was going to say like someone like Mandy Rose makes a lot of sense, but she's pretty firmly established as a major act in NXT. I don't think that they're going to be looking to bring her up, at least in this gimmick. I think they have much bigger plans for her. So, I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess like if you don't see much in her and you want to repackage her into some sort of role like this, I mean, like someone like Indy Hartwell, but even that, I don't know. It would surprise me if it's someone from outside the company. I mean, it seems to me like if they did sign someone, we would have gotten, you know, it'd be out there by now.
I can only imagine the reaction if it turned out to be Bailey in a new gimmick. I think the odds of that are, you know, like less than 0.001%. But I was just like, you know, in my head running down the roster and who hasn't been on TV in a while. Like, whoa. Anyway. All right, Job Ryan. We'll talk more about that over the next week, I think, and next week for sure. What else have you got for us, Amanda?
My third question is on Double J, Jeff Jarrett. They made reference to the fact that he is the new person that's in charge of these WWE live events.
Yeah.
Has there been any major changes since Jeff took over? Because I know when he ran the TNA house shows, he would go on the radio a good bit and promote these, because I went to one of those and while I was driving to the arena, I heard Jeff Jarrett getting interviewed on the local radio. So I don't know if he's doing that now or does he have some other tricks up the sleeve to get attendance up now.
I don't know that he's got tricks up the sleeve. I mean, they need somebody to be in charge of house show lineups. It'd be interesting job description-wise if it involves local publicity too. He's got experience in the business and it's in his blood, and it's I think it's cool that he's got that gig. He was competitive competitive is overstating it, but he competed with Vince McMahon pretty aggressively. And ultimately Vince doesn't, you know, tend to hold that against you. anything you want to add to that, Brandon?
I was just going to say, it seems like the strategy for promoting live events in general has shifted and changed a little bit, but I think that actually predates Jeff Jarrett taking over and is more so in line with when they started touring again, coming out of the pandemic. There's less focus, I think, on local advertisement and more focus on having nationally run ads that run during their TV that promote all of the cities that they're coming up to. So they're coming off more like a band who goes on tour in spurts rather than a touring company that tours year round. Like, they will pick and choose 30 dates and they'll talk about those 30 dates in commercials, and then they'll satisfy those 30 dates and announce the next 30. It's a very, very different strategy than they've had prior.
All right. I think it's a good strategy. I think it, you might as well kind of own the idea of there being, you know, a tour and you're part of it.
Yeah.
Ryan, I appreciate the call, as always.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Yep, enjoy your weekend. All right, well, go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. Thanks for holding so long. What's on your mind tonight?
So I wanted to just get to Liv Morgan about just how she's been, as like booked compared to how, because she was on Corey Gray's podcast earlier today. I listened to that, and she's like, and with every time I like hear her in interviews, she's so super passionate. She's so into WWE. She really is into being champion. And that makes me really become a fan of her because of her being, because in some ways too, she kind of reminds me about she reminds me of Becky, of being seen as the underdog, not seen as a credible person. Now I think what makes Becky and Liv very different is that Becky is a really, really good wrestler, what she's been doing, and Liv is just, I think Liv has great matches with Becky, and she had a good match with Charlotte, I remember, and also with Ember Moon. But when it comes to someone like Natalya, and I fear for Ronda Rousey, is that all that good? She used to be in a ring with like those type of women. Also, she had a good match with Sasha Banks too earlier this year as well, and also Rhea as well. So it just depends. She needs to be in a ring with other really good wrestlers. This is the bottom line to it, because if not, you get something like this where it was not a really good match and it ends up being this situation. So is that fair to say that every time she's in a ring with other credible women who already know how to work in a ring, it makes Liv better because she's in a ring with other credible, great wrestlers?
Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that typically when you have a wrestler who is less experienced or who doesn't quite have the in-ring prowess that some of the real top-tier talent in the company do, that they're typically made better by those wrestlers. It's not a foolproof method, though, because there's also chemistry at play. So if two wrestlers don't have particularly good chemistry, then they're not necessarily going to have a great match. I know that Liv and Natalya have been working the house show circuit as of late, and there was that weird video that came out last weekend sometime where Natalya – yeah, Natalya kind of – it looked like she threw a fit at something Liv did, but then she took to Twitter herself and basically broke character and said she was thanking Liv for the match, but it really didn't look like that. So, I don't think that they have had the greatest chemistry, and I thought that their match tonight was okay, but it had a couple of spots in there that were a little questionable. I'm definitely – I'm intrigued by the match between Liv and Ronda at SummerSlam because I think that it presents some interesting avenues for them to take storyline-wise. I think that if they really want to get behind Liv here, then it would be really important to keep the title on her. And I think that the only way that you keep the title on her and really put sympathy on her going forward is maybe to turn Ronda. And the crowd seems to want that to happen anyway. So I think that there is some interesting avenues that they can take if Liv beats Ronda and Ronda turns on her, making Liv, you know, ultimately sympathetic. But I think that there is a chance that the match is just not good at all. I mean, that's sort of been the fear with a lot of Ronda Rousey matches on this run. She doesn't seem as motivated as she did the first time. The chemistry that she had the first time is not there. I think with Ronda, she came out of the gate hot. And for her first match, she was way ahead of where I think even the most reasonable of expectations were that she would be. But she's improved very little since then. And I think that has caught up to her.
Go ahead, Kyle. Any follow-up on that?
Yeah, and maybe too because she, you know, compared to Becky, when she came back from pregnancy, then Ronda, she felt because Becky is a lifelong wrestling fan and wants to be wrestling, and she didn't feel like she ever gave birth anywhere. Every time she comes out, she has to have stuff like that. So it still surprises me about Becky every time she comes out. But then when it comes to Ronda, she's like, she doesn't feel like she just does it. She's just there just to be there, not caring for stuff like so. It's very different the way how both of them came back in that situation. So, because Becky cares and Ronda clearly doesn't, so.
Well, and I'll add too, I'll just put it bluntly. Becky comes across as a normal human being having the time of her life and whatever she's doing, and Ronda comes across as a quirky human being who is never particularly happy about anything and is, it seems, a smile is something she has to practice by looking at other pictures and videos of human beings smiling, so she knows how to do it when she comes out. I mean, it just doesn't feel like – I mean, part of pro wrestling is connecting with the crowd, heel or face, that this is something you love doing, and – they're very different people, and Ronda being a public figure whose role is to be beloved and compelling, as it just, it's a stretch, and we see it all the time. It's not just about her love of wrestling or her progress as a wrestler, or whether her immense gifts athletically combined with her incredible hard work and dedication to be great at MMA. It doesn't matter whether that translates better to pro wrestling if she comes across as, you know, a weirdo, as Becky aptly put it.
I think Ronda's personality is too complex to be a one-note wrestling character. Like, she's too complex to be a babyface or a heel because she has so many qualities of both. I mean, like,
yeah.
She's the hardworking, you know, sort of badass fighter, and then she's also, you know, really ornery, and she has her
and
weird
petulant
sort.
And
yeah, they're
and toddler like in her interpersonal social skills.
It's
clearly grown up in other ways. So
yeah, it's so strange because she there seems to be like some contempt there for the audience at times, especially when they're not cheering her. But this is the same woman who, you know, made during her first run was making, had a team following her around, making videos of her going out on by her own volition. We're not talking like, you know, fans run up to her rental car when she's pulling in to work a house show. We're talking about Ronda Rousey of her own volition going outside willingly to meet fans and take pictures and looked genuinely pleased to be doing it. And I don't even say that from just, you know, seeing it on camera on her YouTube channel. Like, I was at a house show that Ronda worked during her first run, and I saw her do it. I saw her actually come outside and hang out with fans for a solid 30 minutes of her own volition. She did not – she was – they were not at all impeding her entry or exit into the wrestler parking lot. She had already arrived, gone inside, and then by her own choice came out the back door to greet fans. So that's also part of her personality too.
Yep. Yep. It is. And – it makes it difficult to slot her and have it be a successful slot, given WWE not being great at highlighting the nuance and layers that make up human beings, especially one as quirky and sometimes miserable seeming, and phony as a babyface and petulant, but also, you know, dedicated and I don't know, you know, whatever. I mean, just, yeah, she's interesting. Anyway, go ahead, Kyle. Any follow-up or a different topic?
So just overall for SmackDown, just in general, it's been so just not every time I watch every week, it's just been not all that interesting. Something's just been, you know, without Roman Reigns and without a championship, and it's like if Raw's more interesting without the champion and mainly what to do with Becky, whatever, stuff like that. When this Raw has all the star power. And I said this during the draft last year when they drafted all those people to freaking Raw. You know, I thought that Liv would do something to make it somewhat interesting to make that then be like how it was like 2016, but I was kind of half wrong. I was accepting a big change of that, but still, it's just SmackDown is if it's just the Roman Reigns show and that's it, and everyone else is just there, like Drew McIntyre, for example, he's just facing Sheamus and like, okay, whatever, it's just a waiting game till Clash at the Castle, because it pretty much is just a waiting game till it's September, and then we're going to wait till it's, what are we going to do all of August, because just have to wait till August for Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns feud. Oh, that's great, just replacing Lesnar for McIntyre, and then that's going to be carrying some matchup. So it's, what can they do to make SmackDown interesting again, or is it just a lost cause, just a Roman Reigns show, and no one else matters, because that's what it always feels like?
Brendan, any reaction to that?
Well, they sort of shot themselves in the foot a bit, because they've spent 2 years now building Roman Reigns as the sole conqueror of the entire company. And I don't want to make that sound like a total negative, because I have enjoyed the last 2 years of Roman Reigns perhaps more than I've enjoyed any character in WWE in the last 10 years. So I think that what they've done with Roman Reigns has been largely incredibly positive. The problem is that they weren't really working on anyone in the background to any significant degree. And you can see that they're now trying to do it with Theory. They're trying to build a new star. They're trying to reheat Drew McIntyre, who has been lukewarm at best for the better part of the last year and a half. Drew McIntyre is a guy that they really, really dropped the ball with, and someone who should, for all intents and purposes, be carrying the show on a week-to-week basis when Roman Reigns is not there. And he's unable to do that because they've hampered him with this stupid sword and a feud with Sheamus where they're literally feuding over either, number one, not wrestling each other, or seeing how many times one or the other can get disqualified. I mean, like, they've faced each other on what seems like every SmackDown for the last month and a half, and I don't know that they've had a finish in any of those matches. They just fight each other to no end. week after week after week. It's not going to get Drew over. It's not going to get him in a place where he feels like a legitimate contender for Roman come September. They've just done a really poor job at managing the rest of the roster. And when you cut that many wrestlers and when you have guys and girls out on injury, add that to a brand split on an already thin roster and 5 hours of television to fill when you've taken SmackDown and drastically reduced the star power that you had on it in last year's draft. And you get the kind of shows that we've been getting week in and week out that feel like they are constantly punting the ball down the field to next week. And then next week comes and they just move the goalpost and punt the ball again because they don't have the roster depth to give meaningful shows right now.
Yeah. And I mean, if they think Theory and Madcap Moss and – I mean, you know, Montez Ford, I'm trying to expand around. I mean, it's just the people that they think are the next generation right now. I mean, Cody is, you know, mid-30s and has a lot of mileage on his body. So when he comes back and, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins have, you know, plenty of time left too. But, man, you need to have some fresh opponents for them that people care about and have that star power. And, you know, the way they're running things right now, they don't need much more depth than they have, but they don't have that bullpen or that bench to when they do have an injury or a setback to make it work. Kyle, yeah. Any closing words?
So the last thing I'll mention, you just mentioned Rollins, and I don't know if it was on Monday, but you were here way about – I talked about, you know, if they'll ever do Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. I don't know if they'll ever will it again or not. He just – I don't like when they do – I don't like when they have a match and they end in disqualification and then they usually go back to it. But then if they don't, why do they do that ending? Like what do you think people are going to do, forget about it? Now, some people might – I'll never forget about that, just like how they showed the Theory replay on Raw of Robert him at Elimination Chamber. I didn't forget that either, but they showed it because people probably have. But so something like that, why they just – you have Seth Rollins doing nothing right now. He just in limbo on Raw with no credible story headed into SummerSlam. Now, if he's going to face Riddle, then there's something, but still, it feels like he's like still in limbo still. And it's like, I don't know. It's like they usually take title off of Roman Reigns, and just what can they do to make that show better? Just, I guess, take the title off of them. But that's a different call.
I think so. Yeah, I have no confident guesses on what they're going to do with the world titles, the unified title, and how they're going to split it. I mean, I'm intrigued. Like, I think they probably have something in mind, or, you know, an idea or two that has some flexibility, or maybe something very firm and specific that they're just committed to doing. I just don't know what it is, Brandon. And I'm not saying I have confidence it'll be a good solution, but at some point we're either going to settle in and go, oh, they're just going to have one champion, or, you know, we're going to find out they're going to find a way to split them. And, you know, there's been a few ideas here and there that are like, oh, that might work. But I haven't heard like a great idea that just makes a lot of sense. But this is also a company that just let Ridge Holland substitute for Sheamus for no reason other than he was in the ring and attacked Drew while Sheamus was standing at ringside. And that makes it official. So, you know, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it feels like they have been consciously treating the title as a single title. And, I mean, they're going out of their way to call it the Undisputed or the Unified World Championship or Universal Championship, whatever the language is that they're using for it. I sort of expected that this was going to be more of a short-term thing, and so I thought that maybe they would be – touting it as individual titles and perhaps even having Reigns defend them as separate championships, where they could conceivably get the WWE title off of him before too long, because that's the title that he's held for less time. So he still maintains the you know, impressive streak with the Universal title if they just take the WWE title off of him. but that doesn't really feel like how they've been presenting it. And I think that if you look at the way that they've been framing the language of Theory, having the Money in the Bank contract, that kind of points to the way that they're treating this as a single title, because theoretically, no pun intended, Theory's Money in the Bank contract should entitle him to a world title shot, not an undisputed world title shot. So if, unless the Money in the Bank contract changed, which they never stipulated, Theory's contract should allow him a shot at either the WWE title or the Universal title. But they haven't presented it that way, which tells me that they're not thinking in that way. So I assume that when Theory cashes in, he will be cashing in for both titles. To me, it almost seems like if you're going to split them up again and you're going to have separate titles, you maybe wait to do it until after both titles are off of Reigns, only because I wonder at this point if you treat it like, well, I don't know. I think because you can still maintain that Universal title reign, like I mentioned earlier. So, I guess there's a bunch of different ways that they can go about it. But I don't get the sense that they're in any hurry to do it, which I thought that they would be.
Brent, anything else you want to bring up before we sign off here?
Yeah, I wanted to just talk briefly about something one of the callers mentioned earlier, which was that New Day and Viking Raiders segment. I think it was actually Chris, the on-site correspondent,
yep,
who mentioned that it got over well in the crowd. And I wonder if that's partially because, you know, it was New Day and they are relatively big stars. I got a chuckle out of Xavier's get up in particular, and I assume he had a great time doing that, being, you know, a cosplayer and whatnot. That was probably a lot of fun for him, and that's cool. But I just couldn't help but feel like they did a lot of damage to the Viking Raiders, who they're trying to build up as this really scary, menacing tag team. And I have always had the hurdle of feeling like it's hard to take the Viking Raiders seriously because they look like they're cosplaying as Vikings. And if the team that they're feuding with is cosplaying as Vikings to make fun of you being a Viking, that just further cements the idea that these are two wrestlers cosplaying as Vikings. So therefore, it just demeans the whole gimmick.
Yes, it does. I have been more annoyed by New Day than I was annoyed by this, but I was bracing to be very annoyed, and I wasn't, but it doesn't take away what you just said and the counterproductivity to what it seems they're trying to do.
Yeah, it just seems like if you want this team to be taken seriously, and they're doing such a great job with the tag division, that it would seem as though the Viking Raiders could potentially be challengers for these unified tag team titles. And if that's the case, you want them to be strong going in. And I just don't think that having what mostly amounts to a comedy act in New Day at this point, poking fun at your whole gimmick when you're supposed to be taken seriously as dominating heels and then getting the better of you on top of it, it just doesn't seem like I have any reason to take them like a serious threat.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it was an uphill challenge anyway.
Oh, for
but,
sure. For
yeah.
sure.
All
wait,
right.
One last thing I did want
sure,
to mention.
Yeah.
I just figured it out. For next week, Max Dupree's sister.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right here on the WWE roster page. It's going to be vacant. Vacant is the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions right now.
Oh God. I will. I'll take that bet. Thanks, Brandon, for ending on that note. at B LeClaire
12.
Okay. Yeah. At B LeClaire 12. And you can follow me at the Wade Keller and follow our brand on Twitter at PW Torch. Of course, visit our website, pwtorch.com. Go VIP if you listen to the show with all the ads and plugs. Thank you. You know, we can't offer the show without some this quantity and length and hopefully quality without you know, ads or membership support, and you get your choice between the two of them. So if you want to go ad free, rates start as low as $4.99 a month through Patreon, patreon.com/PWTorch, and you can also find full details on full VIP membership options at pwtorch.com/govip. So many other things come with VIP membership, and that is a nearly comprehensive assessment or list, and we'd love to have you as a member. So if you made it this far, you are a top candidate to appreciate and benefit from all our VIP features. So check that out. All right. We will talk to you all next time. Thank you, Brandon. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, Chris. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.